सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ Very good. Welcome back. Welcome also to many students who attend this class regularly online. Nice to have you all here. We begin today a new chapter of the Uddhava Gita. In our previous class, we finished chapter 15. Remember, the chapters don't have names as the Bhagavad Gita chapter does, although there's a special thing happening with this chapter I'll mention in just a moment. So chapter 15, we concluded. Chapters 16 and 17, I explained at the end of the prior class, we are skipping over those chapters because they're not very relevant to students of Advaita Vedanta. So for that reason, we're skipping over them. Also, this is a very long text, and if we aren't a little bit more choosy in the chapters we study, it will be here for another year or two studying this text, although the text is wonderful. So anyway, we continue today with chapter 18. And even though the chapters don't have names, this chapter is called the Bhikshu Gita, a Gita within a Gita. Right? So within the Uddhava Gita is a Bhikshu Gita. And Gita, by the way, in this context, like the Bhagavad Gita, the word Gita has a very specific meaning. You don't translate it as song. It specifically means a poetic excerpt of a larger text. The Bhagavad Gita is a poetic excerpt of a larger text, the Mahabharata. The Uddhava Gita is a poetic text excerpted from a larger text, the Bhagavata Purana. And the Bhikshu Gita is a poetic section drawn from the Uddhava Gita. So a Gita drawn from a Gita. Bhikshu is one of our words for sannyasi. Sannyasi, a renunciate. Bhiksha means alms, food that you gain from you get from begging. One who lives on bhiksha is called bhikshu. So Bhikshu Gita, also used by, in fact, used the term bhikshu is used much more commonly by our Buddhist friends. Commonly, you know, refer to ordained Buddhist monks as bhikshus. So this chapter is this wonderful story of a brahmana who lived in Avanti, the modern Ujjain, and long, tortuous story. I mean, he really struggles a lot, and we'll learn a lot from his struggles. Also, the whole chapter is mostly story. And the style of storytelling, in both in the Mahabharata and in the Bhagavata Purana, the style of storytelling is very expansive. When we studied the Mahabharata, you remember that I excerpted verses because the chapters were just so long. What I've chosen to do here, because it's a very long story, what I've chosen to do here is to remove some of the very extensive portions so that we can better appreciate the essence of the story. So it's condensed maybe about half of the original, but we haven't lost any of the meaning. I promise you that you will get 100% of the meaning of the story as we go through it. So, with that brief introduction, I think we can begin. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Katayanti Mahat Punyam, Katayanti Mahat Punyam, Itihasam Ihodhava, Itihasamihodbhava tamaham varnayashyami tamaham varnayashyami nibodha susamahitaha nibodha susamahitaha. At the end of the line, you see Uddhava. Sri Krishna here is addressing his friend, his cousin, Uddhava. The whole of the Uddhava Gita is in the context of Sri Krishna's spiritual instruction to Uddhava. And he tells, O Uddhava, katayanti. They tell mahat punyam itihasam. The general they, whoever they are, referring to a traditional story. So the storytellers tell a traditional story, itihasam, a traditional story, which is mahat punyam, which is a very holy, very blessed story, this itihasam. And tam aham varnayishyami, aham, I, varnayashyami, I will describe it, tam, to you, Uddhava, nibodha susamahitaha. So, nibodha, you would say, suno. You listen, but susamahitaha, dhyan se, suno. Listen carefully. So, not that he needs to remind Uddhava. Do you think Uddhava is going to nod off during his conversation? Not likely, but it's also part of the style of poetry. It's also anticipating the fact that we will be studying these very words long after they were uttered by Sri Krishna to Uddhava. So the story begins. And just a quick comment. Notice how much of the tradition of Advaita Vedanta is based on stories. It begins in the Vedas themselves. Storytelling begins, especially in the Upanishads, the Upanishads being the source material for all the teachings of Vedanta. So many of the teachings are set in the context of a story. A story of a sage and his son, a story of a debate among sages, various stories of mostly concerning sages, since the rishis, since the contents of the Upanishads contain the teachings of the rishis. So you won't be surprised if the Upanishads contain stories mostly about rishis. In the same way, you certainly won't be surprised if the Bhagavata Purana includes stories about Krishna. And then, of course, we have a story within a story. Very common technique. So in this story of, actually, even story within a story within a story, I'll spare you all the layers. So in the context of the story of Sri Krishna teaching Uddhava, in that context comes another story, and this is a story about this Brahmana. And the story begins. Kenachit bhikshuna gitam, kenachit bhikshuna gitam, paribhutena durjanaihi, paribhutena durjanaihi, smaratha dhriti yuktena, smaratha dhriti yuktena, vipakam nijakarmanam, vipakam nijakarmanam. So prior verse was the word gitam was used. Itihasam, this story. So this itihasam, gitam is in this verse. So this itihasam, this story, Sri Krishna says, the story that I'm about to narrate to you, that itihasam was gitam, told. Here it means told. It was literally sung, but generally we don't sing stories because it's poetry. It's called gitam, so a poetic story. So this story was is Gitam, was told Kenachit Bhikshuna. It was told by some bhikshu. And again, bhikshu means sannyasi, someone who has renounced conventional worldly life, dedicated himself exclusively to spiritual growth. But this particular bhikshu, this particular sannyasi, was paribhuta. He was overcome. He was overpowered. He was tortured is too strong a word, but certainly annoyed, durjanaihi, by wicked people. People didn't like him, and they gave him a hard time. The story is why that is so. Why should people dislike this bhikshu? We're going to find out. I'll give you a sneak preview. This bhikshu was a... Do you know there's an American acronym, PITA? Any of you know that one? PITA, pain in the... Now you know. So... Before becoming a sannyasi, this bhikshu was a fill in the blank. And now that he he's taken sannyasa, do you think people suddenly love him? That's the story. We're going to see this story in some detail as we proceed. But as a result of his deeds prior to sannyasa, he really was troubled a lot, durjanaihi, by people who disliked him, by so-called bad people. But this bhikshu learned a lot from his mistakes, and learning a lot from his mistakes, he smarata dhriti yuktena. He was dhriti yukta. He was full of dhriti, commitment, courage. He was ready to confront his defects. Not everyone is able to do that, right? When you are confronted by your shortcomings, many people tend to kind of ignore that or even disagree with it, argue with it, and it seems like men are more likely to do that than women. Not always, but that seems to be the case. So here we have a bhikshu, a male sannyasi, who was dhriti yukta. He was ready to face up to his shortcomings, smarata, which he remembered. He recalled these shortcomings, and he expressed them in his stories. And what he expressed in his story was the vipakam, the unfoldment, nija karmanam, of his own karma, of his own deeds. By the way, karma here probably doesn't refer to past janma, purva janma karma, but the deeds he did in this life. So the vipakam, the fructification, the consequences, that's a good word here, the consequences of his own deeds, specifically, the consequences of his own mistakes that he committed prior to becoming a sannyasi. He faced up to those mistakes, but mistakes have consequences. And one of the consequences was he was paribhuta. He was troubled by all these durjana, by all these bad people. With that one-verse introduction, the story begins. Avantishu dvija kashchata, asidadhyatama shriya, varta vritti kadaryastu kami lubdoti kopanaha. Avantishu, in the lands of Avanti, modern Ujjain, Kashchit Dvijaha, there was a Brahmana. Dvija, literally twice born, referring to a Brahmana. Kashchit Dvijaha, there was. Kashchit Dvijaha Asit, there was some Brahmana. A Brahmana who was Adyatamaha Shriya, who was extreme. Tama is the like in English, most. We have a comparative and superlative, more and most. So this one means most. He was Adhyatamaha. He was most blessed, Shriya, with wealth. He was extremely wealthy, not just somewhat wealthy. He was extremely wealthy. How did he become so wealthy? Vartavrittihi, through his work. He worked hard for his money. And don't tell me a joke about Brahmanas not working hard and all of this stuff. These are stereotypes. There's no person who fits any stereotype. So this Brahmana broke several stereotypes, one of which is he worked very hard and he accumulated a huge amount of money. You see that? Kadaryaha tu. Tu, but he was Kadaryaha, which is a little bit of an obscure word. Here the kad is like the prefix ku, bad. So Kadarya ku, but ku plus arya doesn't work. He was not a good person. He was simply not a good person. He was hurtful to others, and he was, and more than anything else, he was miserly. How do you accumulate a tremendous amount of money? One step is hard work, and the other step is don't spend any of it. That's what this Brahmana did. He accumulated all this money, not just through hard work, but he never spent it. He was extremely miserly. And not just miserly, he was kami. He was driven by desire. He was lubdaha. He was greedy. And he was atikopanaha. He was always angry. In other words, he was a pretty obnoxious person. You probably know someone like this who has more money than they need. They always want kami, always want more. Lubdaha, greed, always want more. Atikopanaha, they get angry every time there's an obstacle to making more money. This is the nature of the person. So very difficult person. There was a comment. I just wanted to share you. So I'm backing up a little bit. In the introduction to this chapter, the commentator gives a brief introduction to each chapter. And a commentator makes an observation about this word durjana, the bad person. So these bad people who tormented the bhikshu. They tormented him. And the commentator says the purpose of this whole story, and this is why I'm interrupting myself to share this point, because it'll be helpful as we go ahead in this story, to get the big picture. According to the commentator, of course, is Sridhar Swami, famous for writing this commentary on the Bhagavata Purana. And in his introduction to this chapter, he observes that Durjana, the real problem is not the people around you. The real problem is you. Wow. This takes a lot of understanding to accept. Someone who says, no one likes me. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's possible that they behave in such a way that they hurt other people? They hurt everyone that they meet and encounter. Everyone who comes close gets hurt through their deeds and through what they say. And therefore, this person complains, they don't like me. It's their fault. Is it their fault? Not in this case. Of course, there are people who wrongly feel no one likes me, but the fact is everyone likes them, but they can't feel it. That's a psychological problem. That's not our topic here. This is a case, in this case, someone who hurts everyone they encounter is unliked, disliked by everyone, but then they tend to blame everyone else. They don't like, oh, famous one, they're all jealous of me, right? Everyone is jealous. I'm so wonderful. I'm so lovely. I'm so wealthy, whatever it is. And therefore, everyone is jealous of me. That's why they don't like me. Who really possesses the problem? That's what this story is about. And sadly, such people usually don't get it. This Brahmana was such a person. He blamed everyone else. They were all perhaps jealous of his wealth and his accomplishments. But he later had to admit that he himself was the problem. And we'll see that as the story continues. Anyway, it was a nice comment of the commentator. I wanted to share that with you before we continue our story. Nyatayo tita yastasya, nyatayo tita yastasya, vangma trenapi narchita, shunya vasata atmapi, kale kamara narchita, kale kamara narchita. End of the first line. Tasya, for that Brahmana, all of his jnatayaha, all of his relatives, and also atithayaha, and guests, all of his relatives and guests, end of the second line, na architaha. They were not respected by him. They were disrespected by him. They were not respected. Krishna says, vang matrena api. Even by vak matra, even by a mere kind statement, his relatives and guests never heard a kind word from his mouth. Vang matrena api. Not even a kind word did he utter. And he shunya avasat, by the way, shunya avasata, the grammar rule, shunya avasate. He lived in an empty home. Empty of what? The commentator says, no dharma and no karma, no proper deeds. So it was let's call it a spiritually empty home. The home of a very materialistic home. That's something I think we could relate to. So he lived in a home that was very materialistic. And atma api, even for himself, kale, at the proper time, kamaihi anarchitaha, he was not archita, not worshipped here, even though that's a literal meaning, blessed. He was not blessed, kamaihi, by pleasure, kale, at proper times. And I don't like my translation. I translate this and then I second think everything I translate when I study it later. That translation is fine. It's literally correct. He was not respected at times. But I get a different reading for this, a different meaning for this. He himself was not archita, literally worshipped, kamaihi, by pleasures, And what I interpret that to mean is he didn't even give pleasure to himself, is how I now read it. So he didn't give pleasure to anyone else. He was really one of these really hard, tough people, like a rock. What do they say? The heart made of stone is kind of the sense of this person here. So he had a heart made of stone. He didn't say or do anything nice for anyone else. Atma api. Even for himself, he didn't do anything nice. And you see how this is kind of a setup. He was starved of affection. And that's a very big problem. Someone who is starved of affection loses empathy. This is a little bit psychological, but I think it's important to bring up. Empathy, this concern for others, is one of the most important traits. It's our humanity. What makes a human a good person is their ability for, is their capacity for love and compassion. And this person had no love or compassion even for himself, because that's where it begins. If you are so tough on yourself, naturally you're going to be tough on everyone else. That was this person. He was just brutal with himself. He drove himself constantly to be successful in gaining money. He drove and drove and drove himself. He didn't give himself a break. He didn't have a holiday. No holidays for this poor fellow. Now, and here comes a problem. If you are so tough on yourself in that way, won't you be tough on others as well? Can I ask you not to chat in class? Is that well, please? Thank you. So if you are so tough on others, if you're so tough on yourself, you're going to be tough on others. That's where the lack of empathy comes. And psychologists say again and again, you may have heard this and it may have sounded puzzling. Maybe it'll sound less puzzling now. How can the psychologists say, how can you love others when you don't even love yourself? You can see the basis for that statement now. You don't love others because you're hard on yourself, therefore you're hard on others. So there's a lot of truth to that statement. You can't love others unless you love yourself. You can't respect others unless you respect yourself. And so on. So, Atma api kamaihi anarshitaha. He was starved of affection, both by he didn't love himself. Also, and what we're going to see in the next several verses is that when you're hard on yourself, you suffer. When you're hard on others, they suffer. And how do they treat you? That's a nice expression, blowback. when he mistreats others and treats them with disrespect and doesn't utter any kind words, he's going to suffer the consequences of his own behavior. If he mistreats other people in that way, they're going to mistreat him, which is what is said in the very next verse. Dushilasya kadaryasya, dushilasya kadaryasya, duhyante putra bandavaha, duhyante putra bandavaha, dara duhitaro bhritya, dara duhitaro dhritya, vishanna nacharan priyam, vishanna nacharan priyam. So, this person was dushila. He had a terrible character. He was Kadar Yahav. We saw that word before. He was miserly. He was mean. And he was Duhyante, not surprisingly. He was Duhyante. He was hated. Putra Bandhavaha, by his sons and other family members. When you mistreat others, they mistreat you. You bring about your own suffering in that way. Not only his sons and relatives hated him, but what about his dada, his wife? Would you want to be his wife? Oh my gosh. He had a wife. Poor lady. Oh my gosh. So he had dada, he had a wife, he had duhitara, he had daughters, and he had britya, he had servants, all of whom were vishannaha, deeply depressed. So his wife, his daughters, and even his servants were all deeply depressed and significantly na acharan priyam. They showed him no affection, priyam. So look at this. When, just to go back to that, he was hard on himself. He was hard-hearted. He didn't love himself. He mistreats everyone else as a result is a first consequence. And look at the second consequence, the so-called blowback. So first consequence is he mistreats others. Then the next consequence is they treat him poorly in return. So it's like the opposite of an investment. Investment, you put in something, you get double back. Here, you cause some harm, and you get twice the harm in return. Really, that is this what's being described here. Then, Tadavadhyana visrasta, Tadavadhyana visrasta, Punyaskandasya bhurida, Punyaskandasya bhurida, Artopyagachannidhanam, Artopyagachannidhanam, Bahwayasaparishramaha, Bahwayasa parishramaha, bahu ayasa, breaking the words apart. Up at the top, tad avadhyana, due to his avadhyana, not caring, his neglect. So he neglected his family, he neglected his servants, he neglected every. And he even neglected himself. Tad avadhyana. Due to that neglect, visrasta punyaskanda, all his punyaskanda, his accumulated good karma, visrasta, was exhausted, depleted. So to neglect, our Christian friends have a nice term, sin of omission. We even use that similar term, pratyavaya dosha. We have a similar term in Sanskrit. Sin of omission is when you cause harm, not by what you do, but what you don't do. Pratyavaya dosha is often used to refer to your failure to do a ritual that you're supposed to do. In the old days, there were certain rituals that had to be done every day. If you fail to do those rituals, pratyavaya dosha, sin of omission, as a result, your good karmas get exhausted. Well, here we're not talking about rituals. We're talking about how you behave with others. We all have a dharmic responsibility to help one another. Kind of obvious, right? We live together as a society, as a community, as a family, and whenever we live together, we have an ethical, moral, dharmic responsibility to help one another. It's common sense. You don't need a scripture to tell you that. If you live together, you have a responsibility to help one another. So he didn't do that. He neglected to help others, family members, guests, anyone and everyone. He neglected. That's a so-called sin of omission. He didn't help anyone. In fact, he didn't even take care of himself. The only thing he did was accumulate money He accumulated money, but he didn't spend it. He didn't spend that money on himself. He didn't spend that money to take care of others. We discussed before how this is one of the primary teachings of this Vedic principle called Purushartha, Purushartha Chatushtaya, the four goals of life. The so-called four goals of life, this is enumerated in the Vedas themselves, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Dharma here means not just living a good life, but accumulating good karma. Artha, accumulating wealth. Kama, enjoying the blessings that we've been given, and moksha, spiritual liberation, which is not our topic today, so we set that aside. And we focus here on these three, dharma, artha, and kama. We've said before that if you live in a society, dharma dictates that you help one another. That means that whatever artha you have, it's supposed to be shared with others. If it's not being shared with others, look at this. In this case, he wasn't even giving it to himself. So look, the comma, does pleasure is one of the four goals of life. By the way, a quick aside, which is really important here. Some people wrongly accuse, and when I say some people, I mean this actually began in the 19th century. The first Europeans to go to India and study Hindu culture made terrible blunders in how they characterized Hindu culture. They looked at the scriptures and they came to this horribly wrong conclusion that Hinduism is world-denying, world-negating. Hinduism's teaches that you should give up all worldly things and focus only on getting some rebirth, going to heaven or moksha. This was a huge misconception on the part of those early Indologists, and it somehow stuck. Sadly, it got stuck in the general, not only in academic minds, but got stuck even in India. It's absolutely a wrong concept to think of Hinduism as a world-denying kind of, you should be very detached from the world. Tell me, if Hinduism teaches, if a central teaching of Hinduism is that you should be detached from the world, why is kama, pleasure, one of the four legitimate goals of life? Do you get that point? This is important. This is something that people really don't understand. And we have those German Indologists to thank for this kind of thinking. This thinking, which through what people rudely called the colonialization of Indian thinking, it got stuck. It got stuck. Hinduism is not a religion of detachment. Hinduism acknowledges kama, pleasure, as a legitimate goal of life, a goal of life that is accomplished through artha. You should gain some wealth so that you can enjoy your life. And kama is legitimate so long as it's pursued in keeping with dharma. If you pursue kama in a ethical, non-hurtful way, It's absolutely legitimate. Not only legitimate, it's important to spend your money for your own enjoyment of this life and to spend your money to help others enjoy your life. This is a proper interpretation of these four Purusharthas, these four goals of life, which is really misunderstood. The fact that not only Western academics, but even Indians say that Hinduism is detachment. Absolutely wrong. So we have to understand that the pursuit of kama, pleasure, is not just legitimate, it's mandatory. And why is it mandatory? Look at this. Suppose you were given a gift by a close friend, and it's something that you can't use. We would just have some fun with it. Suppose someone gives me as a gift a hairbrush. All right. What should I do with that hairbrush? If I take that hairbrush and just throw it aside, what kind of message is it to the one who gave me the gift? Anything that's given as a gift should be received with some sense of gratitude, even if you have no immediate need for it. By the way, this can grow back, so maybe one... Give me a hairbrush, maybe one day I can use it, but not now. So the point is that anything given as a gift should be received with gratitude. Ishvara has given us this life. Life with lots of things to be enjoyed. Many trivial things, but just because they're trivial, why not? You know, not lately. Years ago, I used to travel a lot and to teach. And I would actually drive myself from place to place to place and did that a lot. And when I was driving past the Starbucks, guess what? Yeah, I would go in and they have the drive-thru. So I would go and get a coffee. And you might say, isn't that an indulgence? Yeah. Why not? If it's received, and here's the point, if it's received with gratitude, that is, I don't just remember, this is a life of full-time spiritual practice, so when I get that Starbucks coffee, along with it comes a prayer of gratitude. I'm grateful, and grateful to Ishvara that I am able to enjoy this cup of coffee. How wonderful. What is self-indulgent about that? To get that coffee and feel grateful to the God of the cosmos for having the opportunity to enjoy a cup of coffee. This is a Hindu worldview, not one of utter detachment, in spite of the fact that sannyasis are characterized as being detached. Yes, detached from worldly goals. My goal in going to Starbucks was not to go there for some happiness, not to go there for moksha, which is the ultimate goal of life. My goal was simply to get some coffee. Nothing more than that. So it's not contrary to detachment. Do you think sannyasis should not drink coffee? Is there some rule? By the way, the Buddhists, I think 230, there's one scripture that gives 234, I think that's the right number, 234 rules that Buddhist monks have to follow. Do you think there's a set of rules like that for Hindu sannyasis? And one of them is no coffee. Thank goodness, because I drink a lot of coffee. So you get the point, and that is that it is wrong to characterize Hinduism as a religion of detachment, a world-negating religion. This was a wrong concept started by German Indologists at the end of the 19th century. It goes that far back. And it got embedded in the mind of academics, and sadly, it even got embedded in the minds of many people living in India. So time to root out those wrong ideas. There's a huge place for detachment, but that's not what this chapter is about. This chapter is about following these four Purusharthas, and actually, here's where the detachment comes in. So if you have money, and you're attached to this, I didn't think we were going to talk about this, but it's an important topic. To be attached to the money and not to the use of money. I said before that money is valuable only when it's spent. When it's not spent, what does it do for you? How does the money in your bank account, how does that improve your day-to-day life? If it suppose that money tripled or quadrupled, how would that affect your day-to-day life? If you don't spend it, not at all. If you do spend it, then your life can be benefited tremendously. And not only your life, but you can spend it on others as well, family members and friends and guests and social causes which need your support. So this is a kind of detachment. You're not clinging to the money, and many people do out of insecurity. And I understand that, but it's time to give up that insecurity, be a little bit trusting, that will be okay. Give up that attachment and spend the money. That's a healthy kind of detachment. Labeling the world evil and you should detach from the world, do you know what? You'd be surprised at this. To label the world as being evil and to say you should not be involved in these worldly activities, that's actually not a Hindu teaching. That's a Christian teaching. Have you ever heard of John Calvin, Calvinism? One of the main Protestant schools? That's exactly what they taught, that the world is evil, Satan. This is how they viewed the world. Satan is out there in the world. You have to protect yourself against Satan, and that means don't be involved. So these Calvinists deliberately distanced themselves from conventional worldly activities. Notably, for Calvinists, there's no music in their churches. No music. No music? That's too worldly. Satan can use your love of music to draw you into the world and into all these worldly pleasures. So I'm kind of pounding on this point a little bit because it is so underappreciated that Hinduism is not a religion of detachment. You can actually find that doctrine in a Christian teaching, and we have to just let go. If you want to be detached from anything, be detached from this wrong idea. Let go. Okay, let's come back to our text here. Where, before I went off on this big tangent, where did I leave off? Tad avadhyana visrasta punya skandasya bhurida. He addresses, interesting, he addresses Uddhava. Uddhava, bhurida means generous. A little contrast here. O generous Uddhava, this bhikshu in Avanti, he exhausted all of his good karma by his mistreatment of all the people in his life, and even his mistreatment of himself. And because he exhausted all of his good karma, by the way, according to the law of karma, good karma is one of the requirements for having a lot of wealth. If you have a lot of good karma, chances are you have a lot of wealth. The converse is also true. If you don't have a lot of good karma, you probably don't have a lot of wealth. So for this this miserly brahmana, he exhausted all of his good karma by hurting the people in his life. How did that affect his wealth? That's what it says in the last half. Artha api, his wealth also agachan nidhanam, got finished. It was exhausted. It was gone. In spite of the fact that bahu ayasa parishramaha, even though he had invested so much work in accumulating all that money, bahu ayasa, he made so much effort in accumulating all that money, it got lost. How did it get lost? I think this is kind of funny. We'll see. How did he lose his money? Nyatayo jagrahu kinchit. Jatayo jagrahu kinchit. Kinchidasyava uddhava. Kinchidasyava uddhava. Daivata kalata kashchit. Daivata kalata kashchata brahma bandhor nripartivat, brahma bandhor nripartivat. So what happened to his wealth? It says, kinchit, some of his wealth, jagrihuhu, was grasped. Who did the grasping? It was taken. Who took it? Nyatayaha, his relatives. So he mistreated them. They got back at him. They took some of his money. Not only did they take some of his money, but kinchit, some of his money, in the second line, O Uddhava, kinchit, some of his money was taken by whom? Dasyavaha, dasyu thief. Some of his money was taken by relatives. Some of his money was taken by thieves. Some of his money was taken, daivataha, by chance. Just got lost somehow, maybe like a bad investment. He got lost. Some of his money went away, kalataha, over a period of time. They have to buy food and all of this stuff, pay rent, although I don't think he was paying rent. So over a period of time, kinchit, some of his money was lost by chance. Some of it was lost by time. Some of it was lost due to brahma bandhu. It's an interesting expression. You may or may not know this. Bandhu means friend, right? Brahma bandhu. That's not what it means. It's an idiom. In fact, it's a very sarcastic idiom. Brahma bandhu is not a bandhu, nor a brahmana. Brahma bandhu is like a fake brahmana, a despicable brahmana. It's an idiom. Is there one in English? We must do that as well. What would be if somebody is not very bright and you say, you must be some kind of genius. That's the sense of Brahma Bandhu. Very sarcastic. So some of his money was taken by these so-called friends, and some was taken by people, and Partiva, kings. And I've interpreted this. This is just my interpretation. Kings don't take your money exactly. They have taxes. So you already know that a lot of your money goes by taxes. So taxation. So in this way, all of his money went away. And then what? Then, look where this story goes. Sahevam dravino nashte, sahevam dravine, drashte, dravine, nashte, dharma kama vivarjitaha, dharma kama vivarjitaha, upekshitascha swajanaish, upekshitascha swajanaish, chintam apadurat, Yayam chintam hapya. Saha, he, that miserly Brahmana, evam dravine nashte, when all of his wealth was exhausted. And when all of his wealth was exhausted, dharma kama vivarjitaha, he wasn't able to spend his artha on kama, pleasure for himself, and dharma, pleasure for others, as we said before. So he wasn't able, he should have used his wealth to as a blessing for himself and as a blessing for others. He did neither. He kept all of his wealth apart. And then, as the prior verse said, then everyone started, like, they give the rat who comes in and stealthily eats all your food. So just like a rat is eating all your food at night stealthily, in the same way, all of these other people are stealthily eating away at his wealth. He ends up with nothing. Further, he is upekshitaha. He's now ignored, swajanaihi, by his own family. They don't want anything to do. When he had wealth, he didn't help them when he was wealthy. And now that he is suddenly penniless, do you think his family is suddenly going to take him in? Doesn't work like that. So he is ignored by his family, and chintam apa, he fell into anxiety, chintam, duratyayam, anxiety that he couldn't climb out of. He became deeply depressed. He was in a deep hole, and he saw no way out. What's interesting is who dug that hole. So he's in a deep hole, all right, but a hole of his own creation. So if you are stuck, and you know, this is a common metaphor for life, someone who's stuck in a hole. In fact, I myself use that metaphor for depression. To be depressed is to be like stuck in a deep hole because you don't see a way out. You only see dirt. Everywhere you look, you see dirt. And if you look up, that's so far away, it's impossible to get there. So how to get out of that deep hole? Well, this Brahmana does indeed climb out of that deep hole. Just as a person who's struggling with depression can climb out of a deep hole. How to climb out of that deep hole? One little step at a time. You look up and the sky seems so far away that like you're so deep. Imagine a 100-foot deep hole. When you look up, that the sky looks like a little dot. It's so far away. But suppose you just climb up a little bit. You know, like you dig, I don't know, I'm making this up. You dig some footsteps in the side of the hole. And you stick your foot in, and then you stick your foot in the next little footstep you create. You dig a footstep, and then another. Each footstep, you only go up about 6 inches. So you go up day after day, you manage one footstep 6 inches, another 6 inches, another 6 inches. But you know what? This is how it works. If you're in such a deep hole, do you think you're going to get out of it in a moment? Took you a while to dig the deep hole, right? It takes a while to become very depressed. If it takes a while to become very depressed, it's going to take a while to dig your way out of that deep hole. But getting out is guaranteed if there is daily effort. And we'll stop our class here. But when we meet next time, you're going to see how there was a profound transformation in the mind, in the thinking, in the heart of this miserly Brahmana, and how he committed himself to an entirely new path in life, and how he started climbing out of that deep hole step by step by step. We'll see that in our next class. Brief announcements. We have our Vedanta class, Shankara's great text, Upadesha Sahasri, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, followed by Satsanga, question answer at 11. Come and join us. We'll conclude with our prayers. Just like this one. Thank you. Om Gananaham Tva Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavingavinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrinvan Uttavasira Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Gururatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadgurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah Sarve Santu Niramayah Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Amritangamaya Om Shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.